This is the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. Time now for this month's edition of Compass Radio. Once a month, we hear what it's like to live with mental illness. Our guides are the people of Southern Oregon Compass House in Medford. It's built on the clubhouse model of community mental health care. It's a place where people with persistent mental illness come together to support each other and their shared place. This month, we hear from Patrick. He's had long, steady periods in his life, but also eruptions of schizophrenia and some personal tragedy. Patrick sat down with Remington Jarvie at Compass House to tell his story.
I lived in Eugene for 36 years and worked as a manager or department shift supervisor for many different employers there. I wanted to, try out maybe the grocery store chain and get a career job. So Winco opened up a store there in April 99, and they liked me so much they wanted me to go up to Washington or down to California to open up other stores, and it was too far away from my family in Eugene. So they decided, when they opened up the store here in Medford, only 2 hours away, I decided to do it. So they moved me. They paid for all the money to move me here to Southern Oregon as their department manager. And then shortly after, the whole company decided that the maintenance department wasn't necessary anymore. They keep the produce and the meat, but they laid me off, and then I went to work for the car guys for 10 years, Chevrolet, GMC, Crater Lake Ford. So that's how I got here.
Well, what about your family? You've been married? You have kids?
I was married once from 86 to 91, and I've got a 31-year-old daughter and a 30-year-old son out of that marriage. And my mom was killed in 2004 in Eugene. She was crossing the street, and somebody wasn't paying attention to their driving. And then my dad's still alive. He's had two brain strokes. He lives in Billings, Montana. My oldest brother, Johnny, he's a ward of Oregon State. He's paranoid schizophrenic. He's in pretty bad shape. He always has been since 1979. But Oregon State has taken very good care of him. And now they're taking very good care of me, too. But Link, my other brother, he's in Hardin, Montana. Poor gentleman from smoking, I guess, and all the welding fumes he breathed in, he got larynx cancer. So he's had his larynx and stuff removed. But he's not terminal. He's still living in Hardin, Montana. That's my whole family there.
You mentioned that your brother is schizophrenic, and then earlier, before we started this interview, you said something about running in the family.
Yeah, it's we've had my great grandma was pretty bad off when she got older. She lost her mind, and I don't know how many other people in our family, but it does run in the family. And I've been in situations for my own mental health where I can see that. There's times if I don't reach out to somebody and get some support, I will end up getting worse and worse mentally. So,
what's your diagnosis?
Just schizophrenia so far. I've had three psychiatric evaluations. First one was in 96, and then another one the next decade over, but I passed them all. Pretty much the psychiatrist deemed that I didn't need medication or treatment. And it's just kind of overstress, what we would call a midlife crisis. So
96, you said, was the first psych evaluation. Do you feel like you've kind of struggled with mental health or schizophrenia through your whole life, or did it kind of just start happening during that
No, time? It wasn't through my whole life. 96 was simply because I was involved in a burglary. A crime that was ended up being a burglary on my record. And also I was very, very mad at everything. I was just angry at everything. So they put me through a blood test to make sure all my chemicals, I wasn't in balance there. Then they made me go through drug class, and I passed that. And they also made me take anger management class, and I passed that. And I just came out of there with flying colors. See, and then few years down the road, that's when I got with, I worked for a couple places, but I didn't really like it. But when I got with Winco, it just went uphill from there. I got my credit back and just driving around new cars all the time for a whole decade. So, but this last time, a year ago, around Valentine's Day, the responsibility of my life and seeing all the hurt from the world made me just want to give up. So I ended up getting wrongfully terminated at a job here. I arbitrated the claim and won my benefits. They were denying me, but that wasn't good enough. It's just too much weight of this world and the responsibility to get back into the community and get going. I kind of had a nervous breakdown. The landlord I was at, he called the police on me because I had like a little tizzy fit on the porch. I just can't remember too much of it. And I don't like talking about it, of course, because it's very embarrassing. But the police came and got me. Didn't take me to jail. They took me right up to the hospital, did the full blood work on me again, and just decided, you know, they should watch me for a while. And so I came out of that with flying colors. So I had a six-day circuit court hold here in Jackson County, and they sent me to the Juniper Ridge Acute Care Center in John Day, Oregon. And that was a big relief. They just watched me and went back to work. And that same company that I went back to work wrongfully terminated me again. I arbitrated my claim. And that's within 1 year. I'm embarrassed to say, but the next thing I know, I'm homeless. I'm out on the streets. I'm struggling. Nobody would respond to any of my resumes or jobs. And I'm just really holding on to what faith I have, if faith in anything at all. And I was going through a lot of pain with my back and sciatic nerve, and nobody seemed to want to help me. So at the hospital, I was upset at their diagnosis that they wouldn't help me. So I was escorted off by a police, a Asante police. And as soon as I got off campus, I just shed all my clothes on Barnett Road. It was about 2 o'clock in the afternoon on a weekday. And just shed off all my clothes and started walking naked down the street. I don't know why I did it. I was very apologetic to the judge when I had to go to court. But I am mad at this world. I'll still say to this day that I need a support system like Compass House to keep me away from the streets and my mind off of all the negativity in this world and keep my mind focused on positive things, which is value and purpose. There's reasons for everything that is allowed on the planet. And if I don't believe that truth, and if I don't believe that something exists after this life, then I will become, I'll simply become suicidal. And if I can't do it, then I'll end up hurting somebody. Because there's a lot of bad people out there and I'm getting tired of them.
I was noticing you kind of took us through a couple decades, right, of like things that had happened, and mm-hmm. said sometimes you've been very angry at the world and upset and frustrated.
I was sexually abused by my oldest brother when I was real young. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't help.
Contributed to this.
And the guy that killed my mom, he didn't go check on her. I read the deposition. He never went and checked on my mom after he killed her. And when I read that, he wasn't going to make it to court. I was so pissed off that my kids didn't matter, nothing mattered, because he just killed my mom. He killed my dad's wife, and he killed my kids' grandmother. This person killed three people in one, and I'm going to kill him before he makes it to court. Mm-hmm. Well, because of omniscient truth, when I was deciding to do this and planning this murder in Eugene, the omniscient spirit of truth came in and asked me three questions, and after I answered those three questions, I forgave and I forgot that man. So I know I'm very capable when I'm pushed. So the past has a big effect on me right now that always keeps me readily alert to go over the edge and just give up, and so I don't have to witness any more evil that goes on under the sun.
You said you've gone through a couple of psyche vows. Do you have an official diagnosis?
My mental therapist gave that to me. She's gone under the advice of other caseworkers with me and mental therapists. And I asked her just a month ago, I called her out on it. I says, you know, you guys have me on medicine and you can't tell me if I'm bipolar or whatever. I said, what the hell am I? And she came out and says, well, Patrick, you're schizophrenic. And I don't know that I am. I don't know that I'm crazy. I don't know that I'm mentally ill. I don't know it. It's embarrassing. But I do understand that I am. And I agree. And I trust and believe and have faith, not in me, but to the people at Compass House and the fine people at Jackson County. I am schizophrenic and I need help.
You mentioned a lot of instances in your life that were bad moments that you were trying to cope with these struggles. How has your coping changed? Like the way you dealt with it then, and it seems like you have a lot healthier, more constructive methods now.
I'd have to award Jackson County of Medford City of their police and officers that have had to confront me in these situations. They've done nothing but care for me than I thought they did. I don't know how else to answer that.
That's probably a wonderful thing to hear. I'm sure if they could hear that, they'd probably appreciate it.
Otherwise, I'd be in trouble. And I think the fine people of Medford City of Jackson County of jail would agree. I need to be watched and I need support and I need to get the hell out of this situation because I am a dangerous person. I'm addressed in this community as a thief, and that's embarrassing. And now I'm a mentally ill thief, so. But I don't believe that. I believe in something after this life, and I can't prove it. But that's the only thing I can hold on to that keeps me wanting to stay mentally healthy and physically healthy so I can focus on value and purpose, and that's plants, animals, and others, not me, because I'm fine, thanks to Compass House.
That is Patrick, a Compass House member, talking to Remington Jarvie, the employment coordinator at Compass House. We have in the studio with us now Compass House Executive Director Elizabeth Hazelwood. Welcome back to the studio.
Hi, thank you.
So a lot of heavy stuff that Patrick laid out there. And I wonder how much over time people change when they come into the Compass House setting. I think you mentioned he hadn't been with you very long.
Yes, absolutely. And Patrick is one of those people that came to us with a lot of trauma in his life, had really just gotten out of the justice system and was committed to making a change. Over the last month and a half, he's changed so, so much. And I think that it's important that we understand how much of a role trauma really plays. You know, a lot of times people don't realize how close we all are to being homeless and what that effect that would have on our lives and all of the past traumas and what they do and change the way that we think and how we respond.
So he does not have a place to live.
No.
He's on the streets.
Yes, he's homeless.
So there are things that are happening to Patrick that don't happen to everyone, but there were things that I'm sure other people can relate to as they heard him talk about, you know, the hurt from the world made him want to give up, and he has to believe there's good in this world. There are times certainly lately when people feel like nothing is going right in the world around us. So this is a concern for all of society, not just people dealing with persistent mental illness. What do you do for people who are in the situation that he's in, where they've got their diagnosis, but they've also got this awareness of things going on in the world that really doesn't make them feel good?
I think that that's where we as a community really thrive, starting from the police officers that go through crisis intervention training to the Asante Behavioral Health Unit, who is invested in the sanctuary model and really focus on trauma-informed care. It's meeting people where they're at based on what's led them there, not what's wrong with someone, but what's happened and how can we move forward from this. And Patrick talked a lot about a support system, and that changes everything. Everyone needs a place where they're wanted and needed and appreciated for who they are. And if you don't have that, it's really hard to believe in yourself.
Does it seem to take a while? I'm just curious about, you know, what the run of time might be for a person who comes in. They need support, they need help, and then mm-hmm. at some point it seems like they're able to provide it to other people too. And I just is it as different as the people who come through the door?
It is. It's very individualized. But I'd really like to revisit in a few months Patrick, because he has changed so much so quickly. And you know, we were just talking the other day and about how much he does already and how he wants to help our new members feel valued and safe. And he does it in a way he walks through, and it didn't really come through in this interview, but he walks through every morning and says something incredibly nice to every single person there, because he says that nobody did that for him and he feels like everyone needs to hear it. And it makes a difference.
you know, for as much as we've talked about the difficulties of having people in law enforcement work with people who are having acute episodes of mental illness, he had praise for the police in the Medford area. And you were just talking about the CIT training. How widespread is that training now?
So we are here in this county are committed to having all of the officers go through crisis intervention training. NAMI and Jackson County Mental Health really work on doing an incredibly great training on that. And we participate in it as well. And I plan to in the future include Patrick in that because I think law enforcement doesn't hear enough all of the good things that they do in situations like this. And it really can save and change lives when it's handled correctly.
So when you say Compass House participates in CIT, how?
So we go in and do a presentation. I usually take a member, such as Patrick, that has been in the criminal justice system to share good and bad experiences and also so that the officers can see someone when they aren't in crisis, when they are stable and doing well. And a lot of times it's people that they recognize that they've seen quite often. And so it feel like it's a really good opportunity for our law enforcement to see what people are like when they're not in crisis.
That's a huge issue when you think about it, because if the only time you have ever seen another human being is when something was really tense and potentially violent and explosive in many ways, you have no appreciation for what the other person is about.
Absolutely. And I think that it's great for both sides, both our members, to be able to see the law enforcement that are often seen as scary, to see them as normal people, and then reverse, to also have law enforcement see our members as normal people.
This is a Mental Health Awareness Month,
May. It is.
All right. So what sort, are you doing anything special at Compass House to sort of let people know that you're there and what you can do?
We are doing a video series with our members where our members are just telling about just quick little snippets about mental health to break the stigma down, to also talk about how their lives are changing and what ways they're participating and growing. We're focusing on the 53 people that we helped get jobs this year. And it's also going to be great because we're starting construction and moving the next couple months, so it's a good way to remember too kind of where we're going.
So 53 people getting jobs this year. How does this compare with previous years?
We grow every year. So the year before that, we had 41 people get jobs. And before that, it was a little over 30. So we're really striving to help more members not only obtain employment, but maintain employment as well. We have several that have been working now for over a year and a half.
And we've been talking about the move to the new facility for Compass House for a while now. Is it going to happen this summer, you're saying?
Yes, we are breaking ground officially next Monday.
But the facility, I mean, there's a building there. What do you have to do to it?
We have to completely renovate it. We bought a historic building that comes with historic problems, but it's beautiful. And we are super excited. We're hoping to be in by the end of the summer.
So for people to make use of Mental Health Awareness Month, what should any of us be doing to make ourselves more aware of issues with mental illness and how to approach people with mental illness?
Listen, look at resources. There's a lot of fantastic resources out there. Mental Health America, NAMI, are really great ways to get educated on the topic.
NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, will have NAMI Southern Oregon in to talk about their contribution to Mental Health Awareness Month in next week, I believe. Thanks so much to Elizabeth Hazelwood, the Executive Director at Compass House, for making the people of Compass House available to us through Compass Radio every month. Always good to see you.
Thank you.